number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg down, smack on tackle.
Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now. This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
So we're heading into the postseason in college NFL football and also the national championship game coming up in a three-day span this weekend. We have done 17 weeks in the NFL. What we saw was an emergence of a 15-1 team in the Carolina Panthers that for a lot of us, it took some time before we were real believers. I know it took me a number of weeks before I said, you know what, this Carolina Panthers team is getting an MVP performance from their quarterback, and their defense is playing very, very well, and they are well coached, and there are many, many things to like. There was a time where I wasn't sure, and I'll be honest, you know, wasn't my best shining moment, but there was a time at the beginning of the season where I leaned more towards Atlanta in that division than I did Carolina when they both started out 5-0, and the Falcons ended up going 8-8 and did not play, is not playing in the playoffs, and Carolina is the number one seed. But when you look at where we are in the postseason in the NFL, years and years ago, there was when Pete Rozelle was the commissioner of the NFL, there was always this conversation about in what direction does Pete Rozelle want to take this league? And you heard the word parity all the time. Get parity. Well, naturally, you don't want complete parity. You don't want everybody 8-8. You don't want no good teams. But what you do want, and this is where the NFL is so successful at this, what you do want is an opportunity when we get to this time of year where most of your teams that are in the playoffs have a legitimate shot of winning it all. That is not likely the case in other sports. It is very hard for an 8 seed in the NBA or the NHL playoffs to run the table and win it all. Very difficult. Baseball, yeah, that's a different sport to evaluate because of pitching and who's hot. You can usually get through a playoffs with one good pitcher, two good pitchers. It's a harder sport to evaluate. But baseball for years, never because of the wild card is a relatively new thing. It's not like it came out yesterday, but there was a long time where it was just division winners. So baseball didn't really allow some of its more good bottom teams into the postseason. It is a little bit now. But the NFL did. You're a division winner, you get in. If you're two wild cards, you get in. And sometimes that wild card team, you may be an 8-8, 9-7 team. And sometimes your division winner may be 7-9. But the way the NFL is structured, what they wanted from this league was A, everybody's got this level playing field. Everybody's got the same economics. Everybody's got the same reason and ability to go after the top of the line players. When we get to this point of the season, you can be 14-2, home field advantage through the playoffs, but every single game should be, we'll see. And in the AFC, that's exactly how I feel. This would be a shining example of that business model. Really not sure about the Patriots. Really not sure about the Broncos. Not sure about anybody, really. Everybody's got weaknesses. Everybody's got strengths. That's a given in every year. But have you think about years where there just wasn't a dominating team. And for the AFC, for example, it was always hard to really peg because for the most part, not every single year, but for the most part over the last 15 years, the New England Patriots were a team that went into the playoffs usually with a first round bye and an excellent team that people sort of pegged that would go to a Super Bowl. I mean, Tom Brady's won 4, but he's also lost 2. I mean, he's gone to 6 in a career that is really, it's just hard to do that. So you got a quarterback controversy in Denver. You've got a walking mash unit in the New England Patriots. The, you know, the Steelers are a 6 team with a good offense, but got some question marks. The Kansas City Chiefs are a very efficient football team, but things have to go right for that efficiency to lead to wins. Right now, they've gotten 10 straight because things have gone right. They've gotten turnovers. They don't turn the ball over, et cetera, et cetera. The Houston Texans may be playing some of the better football coming into the playoffs in the AFC. They've won 7 of their last 9, but question marks still come about from them. It's going to be fun. It's really, really going to be fun. Now, in the NFC, I hate to be greedy here, and I kind of hate to be pulling for a scenario, but as I mentioned earlier, it took me a little bit to get on board the Carolina Panthers train, but it didn't take me long to get on the Arizona Cardinals train, and I kind of hope they're destined for a championship showdown. Now, Seattle is the thorn in, I think, everybody's side when it comes to the NFC. We're not really buying Washington. I think, again, I think the Minnesota Vikings could probably use another year or so. But the Seattle Seahawks could be kind of a thorn in the side. Now, if the Seahawks go to the Super Bowl and win it as a 6 seed, this is Pete Carroll's best coaching job. Not when he had the dominating team that won the Super Bowl, but this one. Because I was ready to bury the Seahawks. We talked to Jen Mueller earlier tonight from Root Sports out in Seattle. The way they've closed out the season, the way they've gotten a semi-MVP performance from Russell Wilson and their defense, when after the Arizona loss, it just didn't feel like Seattle was putting together a decent enough team to take and believe that they could play in the Super Bowl. They've got a team now that could win the Super Bowl. And 2 years getting to the game, and they've got a good enough team. I think the only thing that's going to hurt Seattle is the path to get there. Road games are tough. It is hard to win on the road. It is hard to win 3 straight on the road. I saw the Steelers do it 1 year. I think the Giants did it 1 year. It is really, really hard to do. The New England Patriots, when they went to the Super Bowl in 30 years ago, I'm sorry, with the, oh my God, was it 30 years ago? Holy cow. Now I'm getting old. When they played the Chicago Bears, they went on the road all the way through. It's rare enough that that we remember when it happened, but it's not impossible. All right, 800-777-2907. All right, coming up, we'll talk some baseball. The Hall of Fame ballots will be in on Wednesday. Who's going to be the person that doesn't vote for Ken Griffey Jr.? Why he will not be a unanimous decision? Coming up next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Well, I don't know about you, but I do look forward to the Baseball Hall of Fame inductees when they're announced, when the votes are cast. I don't cover baseball like a writer or anything, so I don't have a vote in the process, but I've always been fascinated by voting and the process of voting and why voting goes a certain way. I think it's one of the reasons why I love the Heisman Trophy so much, because I love the strategy of the voting and how you could absolutely campaign in a Heisman world. I kind of like that aspect of it. Major League Baseball, the Hall of Fame voting, you have to get 75% of the votes, and if you do, you get in. And there's never been a unanimous selection into the Hall of Fame. The closest that they've had was Tom Seaver. And I think that was in a year where people were making a big case on they were making a big stink on these steroids. So they had one guy that sort of everybody wanted to rally around to sort of erase some of the stain. But there's a really good reason why. And Ken Griffey Jr. is the guy that everyone is wondering, you know, first of all, absolutely Hall of Famer. Will he be in a unanimous choice? Never been a unanimous, like, no one's ever got 100% of the votes. And if I'm not mistaken, the way the Hall of Fame balloting works is that you pick 6 guys. You have a huge list and you pick 6. So no one has ever gotten a vote on every single ballot. Not even Babe Ruth got a vote on every. Now you may be thinking, well, why is that? That's ridiculous. Yeah, and it is. It is absolutely ridiculous. But here, there's a really good reason why it doesn't always happen that way. It's not an excuse, but it's a legitimate reason, and I actually can support it. What happens is when you have guys like Ken Griffey Jr., real sure locks into the Hall of Fame. Guys that are just like Derek Jeter, just no-brainers, absolutely. It's not that there's somebody that's going to leave him off the ballot because they don't think Ken Griffey Jr. is a Hall of Famer, or they don't think that Tom Seaver is a Hall of Famer. They don't, you know, it's not that at all. What usually happens is because they know that that person is going to get all of the votes, a few writers, and they don't, I don't think they collaborate, you know, collaborate on this or anything. I think it's just some writers say, you know, I know that guy is going to get in. I'm going to cast my vote for some guys that I really hope get in and may need just that extra vote or two to get over the edge. So they take, you know, that old line, robbing Peter to pay Paul. They rob votes from legitimately rich people and give it to the poor voting block that just may need an extra vote or two to get up. That's all that happens. No one is making a "I'm not voting for this person to make a stand about something" kind of pitch. It's usually along the lines of, you know, I really think so-and-so needs to get a few more votes to get in. It could be anybody. And I think they're close this year. And that guy needs some votes. And I think he's close this year. Well, I'm going to make an effort to give them those votes. Now, I know on the one hand, you may say, that's not right. You should vote who you think should make it to the Hall of Fame and leave that aside. You know what? These are baseball writers. And when you're a baseball writer, you form relationships. You talk to people. You talk to these guys. You get to know them. You start reevaluating their careers. And sometimes you're their biggest supporter. Other guys may not see it your way. I know Goose Gossage, for example, couldn't get in for a long time. Wasn't getting enough votes to get in. Kept trying. You know what happens is eventually the word gets out. People start reevaluating it. Look at it in a different set of eyes. New voters come in. They see things a little differently. And just before you're cast off into the Veterans Committee, you get enough support. And sometimes that support comes because votes were taken away from a real unanimous Hall of Famer. Back in the day with the Heisman, it used to be no one would vote for a freshman to win the Heisman. No one would vote for a sophomore to win the Heisman. It was almost like a rite of passage. Like if you get a Heisman vote, you should live by this rule that no Heisman trophy should ever go to a freshman. You needed sort of a barrier to break that down. I don't think this is the same kind of thing where the baseball writers are proud that no one has gotten in on a unanimous ballot. I think it's just circumstances of, yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. is going to get in with 98% of the vote. And I'm part of the 2% that helped vote other people in, Jeff Bagwell or someone like that. So that's basically how that works. I'm looking forward to seeing who the nominees are. I think right now they're thinking it's going to be Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza, and then there could be a couple more, but they think those are the two that are locked. Do you follow this closely at all, Mr. Baseball?
I actually have not followed it this year. Normally, I follow it a lot closer than I have this year, but for some reason, I've just really been into football, really, really into football this season. So I kind of let this year slip, especially because, I mean, Griffey was one of my favorite players growing up, but I don't know.
It looks like it's gonna be Ken Griffey Jr., obviously, and I think Mike Piazza is going to have enough votes to get in, and that's great, because I really, really am glad Mike Piazza is going to get in. But I don't know. They say, like, Jeff Bagwell could use it a little bit more push. He should be in, but they think he's going to need a little bit more of a push to get in, and there have been a couple of other names that have been tossed around. But right now, they know there's two. They're kind of hoping that there'll be three into the Hall of Fame.
The one name a lot of people argue about is Edgar Martinez.
Yeah.
The DH from the Mariners.
Yep. Absolutely. There's always merits up and down about the arguments of whether or not that type of player gets in or whatnot. I find the baseball, one of the things about the Hall of Fame is there are two major Hall of Fames that we get a big ceremony for. Basketball, not as much as football and baseball. But the two sides, when they vote, could not be more different in their approach to how teams people get in baseball. It's because it's a very statistical sport. There are benchmarks that if you hit, you're going in. Now with steroids and the cloud of PEDs hovering it, a lot of that luster has been lost. But if you get a certain number of hits, or you get a certain number of home runs, you can punch your ticket to the Hall of Fame based on that. And even if you don't have those marks, if you compare your career to other Hall of Famers you get in, I've heard guys talk about the Hall of Fame for football, in which none of that is on the table. It is all of that. It is completely argumentative based on your contributions and value. And whereas baseball likes to sort of use its statistics, this is the one thing I've always credited baseball for. Even though we've had the dead ball era and the steroid era, the one thing baseball likes to do is say, look, if you played baseball from 1943 to 1957 and you were a career 320 hitter, you are a career 320 hitter. Congratulations. No asterisk, no even mention of your era or what kind of pitchers there were or what ballparks were like, any along those lines. That's your number. That's great. Congratulations. Compare yourself to everybody else who has a career batting average of over 300. Nobody ever brings up like, well, that was the era where the pitching was a little tougher, or that was the era where they played in ballparks that were hitter friendly, or that was the era where the pitcher's mound was raised or lowered, or this was the era where none of that. You can legitimately compare a career of a guy in the 40s to a guy in the 60s to a guy in the 80s to a guy in the 90s. Football is completely the opposite. If you are a quarterback in the NFL in a run heavy era, your statistics can't match what we're seeing today or tomorrow or whatever. You can't share those kind of statistics in terms of being effective. There are people who make the argument that Terry Bradshaw is a better quarterback than some of the guys we have today because he called his own plays. There are people who say that the NFL, when it had lighter offensive linemen, is a much different style of play than today. There are a number of times statistics from one era to another to another to another are constantly being scrutinized and talked about in different ways. Oh, he had 1,000 yards rushing. Well, back then, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Baseball tries to avoid all of that. Even though it could legitimately do that, baseball tries to avoid all that by saying, nope, 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 our numbers stand the test of times. That's why the purest of baseball fans went really crazy when it came to PEDs. They just didn't want that kind of skewed in the stats.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, the season didn't go as well as planned for the Cleveland Browns, but wide receiver Travis Benjamin did have a very good year, just shy of 1,000 yards receiving. So good that Vizio has nominated him along with four other players for their TVP award, which goes out to a player whose on-field performance most exceeds the value of their contract. He joins Devontae Freeman, Allen Robinson, Tyrod Taylor, and Stephon Diggs as nominees for this award. You could go to Vizio.com to vote for that player, and Travis Benjamin joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, my man?
I'm doing good.
All right, I got to ask you about this award. This is one of the most unique award opportunities I think I've seen an athlete get. Does this mean you're underpaid?
Exactly. In that word, they give you awards to recognize the players whose on-the-field performance most exceeds the value of their contract.
That's an excellent. I've never heard this before. So I want to ask you about your season. You dealt with an ankle injury, just short of 1,000 yards receiving. What clicked for you in 2015?
Motivation and coming to my final year of my contract for the Cleveland Browns, and I just want to thank those guys for drafting me 4 years ago, and I just put my best foot forward.
You are going into your final year. You had your final year with the Cleveland Browns, but the organization is now going through another coaching change. When you arrived in 2012, you played for three different head coaches. For a lot of the fans that always want to call for coaches' heads and not really understanding what players go through, Travis, what is it like for a player to have to go through a brand new coach? You did it three times.
It's tough. And we just can't make an excuse about it because we're NFL professionals and we get paid to perform at this job. So we just take it and roll with it.
Is it hard to separate kind of the emotion of dealing with the inconsistency of having somebody at the helm and the idea that you are a professional and you kind of have to go where the wind blows?
I have fortunate to have Pitt for 2 years, so it kind of wasn't a change this year. But just keep changing coaching and changing staff is that you just got to buy into each and everything they do.
Travis Benjamin joining us, wide receiver of the.
By me.
Travis Benjamin joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, wide receiver for the Cleveland Browns. As far as when you get a new coach, when Mike Pettine arrived, do you have to reintroduce yourself? I think all of us who have worked in an office where a new general manager comes in or a new boss comes in, you have to kind of go through the motions of reintroducing yourself. Do you have to do that as players, or do they pretty much know who you are?
We do it as players. You always want to introduce yourself to the coaches and to the staff, and they watch film by your play, but to get to know you as a person, you always want to introduce yourself.
Is it tough to, because I said this earlier, that sometimes fans and the media are too quick to want to release a guy. Do we not understand that sometimes things take time and there's got to be some sort of consistency in coaching for players these days?
These days it's kind of like a win and loss column, but it always takes time, man. The more time you get, the better the chance you can to build that program and to build a team the way you want it.
A lot is always made about quarterbacks, and people say, you've got this many the Browns have had so many starting quarterbacks. As a wide receiver for that team, as a guy who knows who he has to play with under center, does it matter who's at quarterback, or do you deal with everybody else? Do you need to know who's going to be the starter as quickly as you can, or do you just deal with it whenever it's announced?
As a receiver, we just learn to deal with it. We learn to adapt, we learn to adjust, and we learn that even if it's Josh Austin or Johnny is in, we just learn to adjust, and we know that when the ball is in the air, attack the ball and catch the ball.
Vizio.com TVP Award. Travis Benjamin of the Cleveland Browns, one of five nominees for the player whose on-field performance most exceeds the value of their contract. And he joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. So in terms of this season, what did you learn in 2015? What was it to have this sort of year where you're nominated for this and you're going in, you had your final year? What was your biggest takeaway out of 2015?
I wouldn't say no takeaway. I learned a lot of things that this year, just learn to be patient, because throughout my years before, I wasn't playing how much as I wanted to, and coming to this last year, I got the opportunity and I made the best of it. So just be patient and just continue to play hard.
What is it like to play for a fan base like Cleveland? Starved for a championship, very rabid, very loyal. What has it been like to play for a city like Cleveland?
It's amazing. Those dog pound fans, and each and every Sunday, win, loss, or draw, they're in the game and making noise. And I know for one thing, those guys have our back.
Travis Benjamin joining us. He also played college football at Miami. What'd you think of the Mark Richt hire for the Hurricanes?
It's a great hire for me. From what I know about him, I asked a couple guys around about him how the coach he is, and it's been all positive. I can't wait to see those guys play.
All right, you got to give me a little insight. I hear about I hear about the alumni, I hear about how together you guys are. When it comes to the NFL, how connected are you to other Miami alumni?
We're very connected. Before game, after game, we chat and talking, because 9 out of 10, we all go to Miami on the offseason to work out. So it's about 15 of us. So we basically know each other. So it's always great to see a former Hurricane on the opposite side of the field over there.
When you were at Miami, how often did the old guys who want that program to continue to be successful, how many of those guys tapped you on the shoulder and kind of gave you advice or walked you through some of the issues that you had while you were in college?
Every summer. Even every summer, with those guys out season, they come back to Miami and you get the words of wisdom. You get those keys to success and watch those guys work out. So it always was a good thing for me going to Miami and watching those guys.
Travis Benjamin of the Cleveland Browns joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Again, go to Vizio.com/TVP to vote for the player who most exceeded the value of their contract. Travis, great talking with you, man. Thank you so much and good luck.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it. And again, that's Vizio.com. Check them out. We're going to be giving away some Vizios here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Check out the all-new Vizio 29-inch 2.0 soundbar. Offers amazing audio, compact size, sophisticated new design. Makes it an attractive addition to your TV viewing pleasure. All right, so that was Travis Benjamin of the Cleveland Browns, who we caught up with earlier today. Listen, it is very hard for a person like him, because I wanted so badly to reach out and ask him about Manziel and whatnot, and kind of reluctant to go down that road. But that's a team that is so, and we've been kind of talking about it tonight, is just right now trying to figure out any direction that they can go. Bringing in a baseball guy, need a new general manager, need a new head coach. He went through three coaching changes. He was just finished his final contract year in Cleveland. If he was to stick around, he'd be going through four. And he just got in the league in 2012. I mean, think about that for a second. Of a different guy all the time. Sometimes we don't stop and really think what it means for a team to get a brand new coach. You saw the kind of emotion of Eli Manning. If you saw a little bit of that, the Tom Coughlin press conference on Tuesday. How choked up he was. Listen, the idea of getting new coaches and wanting new coaches and a guy's got to be fired, that is part of sports. That's part of the lore. Ask any coach and they'll tell you, you're hired to be fired. But for the players, imagine being constantly in flux for your job. You're talking about an overhaul. For a guy like Travis Benjamin, for example, that's one of the reasons I asked about having to reintroduce yourself. Not so much, hi, I'm Travis Benjamin. I mean, they pretty much know that. They know their roster. But it's more than just, I play this position and this is what I do. You got to convince them that you're the guy for whatever vision they have for the team, that you're on it. There's a lot of wide receivers. There's going to be a free agent wide receivers. There's going to be guys coming up. There's different styles of play. You've got to pitch yourself once again to a new guy to try to convince him that you need a job to stay on the team. Now, some superstars don't have to worry about that, but fringe guys do, and they have to do it all the time. I'm not calling for super patience on fan bases. I think that's irrational of me to do that. But every time you go through a coaching change, remember, it is more likely that you are going to start all over and remain in the basement than you are getting out of that. There have been a few coaches who have gone in and been able to change the culture immediately. But for the most part, it doesn't happen that way. Have those guys spoiled it for the rest? Yeah, sure they have. The moment you can go to a team and start winning, the moment you go to a team and change the culture a bit, if you're successful at doing that, it does spoil the expectations for the other guys that do have to build. I think the best advice I could, if I could give advice to anybody wanting the Cleveland job, I would say get a long contract that hurts for them to write you a check to go away. Because if you can get them to at least give you some time, you might be able to work some math. But right now, no chance. No chance. It's going to take forever. I know I've been bringing him up in talking about the way, you know, in coaching changes and whatnot. But that's why Gus Bradley in Jacksonville is still employed today, even though the Jacksonville Jaguars once again are going to have a top five pick in the draft. How many of those can you get before expectations are, hey, it sure would be nice to win at least seven games. Once again, a top five pick. So you know what? When you look at the way the team, the Cleveland Browns have operated, it's no wonder they're a mess. No patience. Mike Pettine got there because other guys didn't want the job. They gave Rod Chudzinski 1 year. 1 year before they shipped him out of town. What do they expect? What do they honestly expect? And again, the Manziel situation is just one little small part to the overall big problem. The Manziel situation is we drafted a guy and then we had buyer's remorse. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. It's Tony D on the Night Time, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Glad you could be with us through the night here on Yahoo Sports Radio. We've had a fun night tonight. NFL, little college football, college hoops. Good win for LSU tonight. Good win for the Tigers' hopes to get into the NCAA tournament. Didn't look like it was heading in that direction. But a win over Kentucky. Does John Calipari know what kind of team he has? Because I honestly do not think he does. We'll see, though, as the season progresses, as he goes into the SEC and continues along in conference play. I owe Frank Martin a big apology. South Carolina's head basketball coach.
He's got him rolling.
Got him rolling along. There's only two unbeaten teams in Division I, and it's South Carolina and SMU. He's got them rolling. They defeated Auburn tonight. They're ranked 22nd in the nation. They're 14-0. It's about a year ago I equated Frank Martin's time at South Carolina to being in the witness protection program. Well, now this is Frank Martin coming out to testify at the big trial, exposing himself and leaving himself wide open. That's quite an accomplishment there. And you know what? My analogy of going in a witness protection program is a very good one. Do you know why? The last few coaches that have gone to South Carolina all had pretty good resumes, only to never be heard from again. Dave Odom. Remember Dave Odom? Didn't he coach Chris Paul and Tim Duncan at Wake Forest?
Yeah, I think so.
I know he coached Tim Duncan. I wonder if he coached Chris Paul when he was there. But he was the Wake Forest, big Wake Forest guy. Went to South Carolina? Nah. Darren Horn, remember him when he had Western Kentucky on the map? He's doing television work. Where did his career go? He's a young guy. Went to South Carolina and then disappeared. That's who's gone to South Carolina and become the head coach. You never hear from him again. Frank Martin, Kansas State, big program. Had Michael Beasley, top five team, I think, at one point. Went to South Carolina, albeit there were some circumstances at Kansas State that kind of facilitated that. Goes to South Carolina, and for a good part of his first career, never heard from him. Now he's got a nationally ranked team. Yeah, it's great. Great. And I haven't watched 1 second. I think I watched 5 minutes of their game. One game this year. So now I got to get on the stick and find out when they're on the SEC network, so I can start paying attention to my school's new and improved basketball team. But nevertheless, good win for LSU tonight, because they were not heading to the tournament. And now they've gotten some people's attention. Those are two good wins to start SEC play. They beat Vanderbilt and now Kentucky. And I think they are capable of knocking off Texas A&M. I think they're capable of knocking off South Carolina. And if those teams stay ranked, that'll be added more to their resume. I think when you have a player like Ben Simmons, as he comes more and more into his own and into the kind of style that they want to play, I think they're going to be very, very hard to beat. But more importantly, it's very important for college basketball to get these kind of players on the big kind of stage. You could argue the merits of one and done, and I know. It just doesn't make people comfortable. They just don't like the fact that people are going to school for 5 minutes to play hoops before they go on to their career. I get it. But for college basketball to capitalize on that, if they are to capitalize on it even a little bit, you've got to get guys like Ben Simmons on the big stage. When you're talking about big-time players, and they don't have to be freshmen. You know, they can be guys that have been around the league for a while. Like Denzel Valentine. If he's healthy, you want him in, you know, playing in the tournament as much as possible. You want to showcase these guys as much as possible. Michigan State, they're a Final Four team. They're a national championship contending team. You're not going to have any problem with that. But you could have had a problem with Ben Simmons. because that was, I mean, Providence with Chris Dunn, that wasn't going to be a problem. They got upset tonight by Marquette, but that wasn't going to be a problem for them. They're going to get showcased. But LSU was not. SEC basketball is not very good. And LSU could be one of the better teams in a conference that's not all that great. You know, Rick Barnes isn't doing tremendously good things right now in Tennessee. Mississippi State needs to get going with Ben Howland at the helm. So SEC basketball has got some issues. South Carolina and Texas A&M and Kentucky are ranked. But at one point, Vanderbilt was ranked, and they're not anymore. They lost to Arkansas. So a lot of parity in the SEC. But there's an opportunity there for LSU to sort of climb back up.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Yes.
So I came across this story today.
Yes.
Are you afraid of spiders at all?
They kind of, like, if I see a big spider outside when I'm gardening and stuff, or something along the line, like crawling up my house, I get a little chill, like, ugh. But why?
Okay. So this Baltimore wastewater treatment plant, it's a big, big building.
Nice.
It's deserted. There's nothing in, nobody works there. It's deserted.
Oh, it's not currently treating sewage?
No. It's okay. Just an old one. Inside a building, it has a 4-acre-long web of spiders.
What? 4 acres?
Yes.
Now, see, that freaks me out. That would freak me out. Now, now you've got me nostalgic, because when I was a young man, young child, I should say, there used to be this B movie that ABC showed called Kingdom of the Spiders, and William Shatner was in it. I mean, listen, man, we're talking like 80, maybe 79. It was an old, old movie. But anyway, I was a little kid, and my parents accidentally let me watch it. I wasn't supposed to watch it, but I watched it. And the premise of the movie was that there was these spiders, and they took over a town, and they would bite you, and then they would just wrap you in a cocoon, and they would just save you for food. And it was the scariest thing for like a 7-year-old. And at the end of the movie, like, the whole town is covered in the spider cocoon. So I've always had that feeling of, like, I just don't want to be entrapped in a spider web.
It scientists estimated in the 4 acres there was over 107 million spiders. With wow. Certain spots, just a very small area of the web that would have contain 35,000 spiders in one little spot.
Okay. If you're 100 million strong, you got to be thinking about doing something
with
that, right?
You're taking over the world, something.
You're thinking, right? Like, if you're just hanging, like, you're, imagine if you're 2 spiders and you're hanging on that 4-acre web and you're just like, how many do you think we got here? I don't know. 100,000? No. I'm thinking like at least 10 million. No. I think 100 million. Let's check back in a couple of days. Come back. Yeah, 125 million. I think, well, what are we doing? Well, we're just kind of sitting around. We could do so much. Take over the city. Scare everybody. Take over towns. You just need a couple of spiders to get on the stick and start motivating other spiders to do stuff.
The web was so heavy in spots that it actually moved like big fluorescent lights. Like,
that's
over,
awesome.
Like 3 feet. Like they would swing over.
Are humans going in there to do something, or they're just like going in there petrified and getting nightmares from?
They said they were not prepared for the amount of spider web and spiders that were in
there. Are
there
pictures that I can see?
Yes.
Oh,
I will tweet this link out.
Yes, and I'll put it on the Facebook page, because we like to do fun stuff there at Tony D Radio. All right, we'll continue along the nighttime here on Yahoo Sports Radio. It is Tony D taking you through the night.